So, Caitlin, who are we canceling today?
No, I think we have to go with the theme of the week and cancel James Summerton.
Ooh, big twist. This is something totally new information to me that we haven't talked about in advance. So, wow, incredible. I'm reacting naturally.
Let's get into it. Hey, everyone. I'm Caitlin Burns, and you're listening to Cancel Me Daddy, the show where we take a closer look at all of the panic around cancel culture with thoughtful analysis and verbal shitposting. Today's episode is my first one without Oliver, and I'm feeling a little bit sad about it. Not quite sure what I'm doing, but those of you who are perceptive probably recognize the voice of the intro. I knew exactly who to turn to in this time of need, and that is our favorite cancel uncle, Michael Hobbs.
You're like, when it comes to not knowing what you're doing in the medium of podcasting, I thought first of Michael Hobbs.
Exactly.
Fair enough.
So since the last time we've been on, Michael, you've released a new podcast and it's going very well.
Has it been that long?
It has, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Currently my favorite podcast to listen to. And every time an episode comes out, I'm reminded that we missed our own deadline for a Cancel Me Daddy episode release.
Although I have not been great at releasing regularly lately, but we are out here doing our best.
So, Michael, what do you know about James Summerton?
Well, this person is new to me. I only heard of him the first time when I watched H Bomber Guy's YouTube video about plagiarism, which is, I don't know how embarrassing it is for me to admit this, but it's 4 hours long and I've already watched it twice, the entire thing.
Shit.
And then there's also another video about James Summerton by, I believe, Todd in the Shadows, who I also was not aware of before this, who did a separate video about James Summerton's factual challenges rather than his plagiarism. And so there's a weird internet thing where it's like, here's this person you've never heard of and why they suck. And then you get really interested in it, which I always feel a little bit bad about. Like, okay, here's this person who was not, like, I was not previously aware of, and there's lots of people on the internet who suck. But it's like, okay, we're all going to talk about like the specific way in which this person sucks. But also, it appears from the information that we have that like the James Summerton like really is a fairly problematic person.
Yes. So I actually got recommended a James Summerton video on my YouTube algorithm just a couple weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
I had just watched the Amazon Prime movie, the gay rom-com Red, White, and Royal Blue.
Oh, God. Okay. Which I've been avoiding, but I'm aware of it vaguely.
I'm not typically one for that type of media.
Yeah, same.
Just because I work every day with LGBT stuff, so it's like, I want my entertainment to be not that.
You're like, I don't want to see gay people when I get off work.
Yeah,
come on.
I don't want to see happy gay people. I don't want to see sad gay people.
I don't like it when they rub it in your face, you know?
But I was in one of those moods where I was like, you know, I could use something cute. And actually, I thought it was a cute movie, honestly. So, like, the next day, there's this James Summerton video where he, like, trashes these white women reactions to sex scenes in Red, White, and Royal Blue. And I watched like 2 minutes of it and I like stopped. I'm like, this sounds fake. Like, first of all, he's boring, but it also sounds fake. So I'm just gonna like turn it off, leave it alone. So flash forward like a week or two. And my friend Ash, who I play video games with, also lives on the West Coast and is significantly younger than me, so stays up way later, like, messages me overnight while I'm sleeping, like, you have to watch this YouTube video by H Bomber Guy. Like, you have to. So I kind of, like, watched the first half, and I was like, oh, this is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. And then she wakes up, and she's like, hey, did you watch the video? I was like, yeah, I watched half of it. And she goes, did you get to the James Summerton part? And I was like, who? Mm. What? She goes, immediately drop everything, go watch the second half of this video and come back to me. So I watch it and I'm like, holy shit, like, this guy's career is probably over. Like, I kind of knew right away. So I come back, we, you know, do the group chat like freak out thing. And then I get curious because I notice that he's done some videos on some areas that I've written about, mainly JK Rowling. And at one point a couple years ago, I used to joke with my friends that I was the world's leading expert on J.K. Rowling's transphobia, mm-hmm. because I was one of the first people to ever write about it. Mm-hmm. So I load up one of the videos, and I'm like, I'm not watching it. I'm just going through the transcript. And I come to a line. I'm like, wait a second. I recognize that line. And it's from one of my articles that I wrote for Vox in 2018.
Do you remember the specific line?
Yeah, so I have it here. I wrote, but it shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone familiar with the current state of British mainstream feminism. Though an anti-trans strain of UK feminism has always simmered under the surface, it's really come to flourish over the last several years, especially in the wake of proposed reforms to the country's Gender Recognition Act. And in James Summerton's video, he said, but it wasn't all that shocking to people who know what's going on in current mainstream British feminism. An anti-trans strain of feminism has always simmered under the surface, but it's really come to light over the last few years in the UK, especially after the proposed changes to the nation's Gender Recognition Act.
I think this is one of the things that I think is the most shocking to people is how like blatant it is. Like simmered under the surface, it would be so easy to rewrite that. But no, it's just word for word.
It was literally simmered under the surface that I was like, oh, yeah, that's mine.
Yeah.
Like, I remember that. And then he keeps going, right? Mm-hmm. And he goes, according to Vox.com, he doesn't list anything else. He doesn't mm-hmm. say what article it's from, doesn't say my name as the author, doesn't provide links in the show notes. He steals the quotes that I got from Heron Greensmith, who's an anti-LGBT extremist expert that I interviewed for the piece, steals their quotes and reads them back and quotes it as an expert on extremism.
Okay.
And I'm like, you've just like ripped my article, taken all of the context out so that people can't like follow up on this.
Right. Rather than saying like Caitlin Burns interviewed this expert and just like presenting
but
what the actual
say that
like where he
because
found
then
it.
People are going to be like, "Oh, Caitlin Burns, I'm going to go read. Oh, wait, this is all stolen."
Right.
Yeah. So it's about 6 minutes of this video that was basically just my article.
Yeah. 6 minutes? God, that's got to be like the whole article.
It was, yeah, it had to be. Because the article, I think, we usually shot for like a 6 or 7 minute read time. So yeah, it was a very weird feeling because like everybody on the internet has been talking about this, at least in my circles, for the last week. Mm-hmm. And everybody was talking about it like before. I actually pitched a story for my extra column about James Summerton before I realized that I've been plagiarized.
Oh, yeah.
And my editor got back to me and was like, yeah, it looks like you found out later you're one of the victims. Like, we can't have you write on this. You're too, like, close to it.
Wait, what? That makes you biased? I feel like that makes you more qualified. What?
We just thought it was kind of awkward, so we kind of skipped that. Yeah.
How did you feel when you found out?
I thought it was weird at first. And then I realized that that guy was making, like, an obscene amount of money on his work. Like, his Patreon, I think somebody said, was $170,000 a year, and that's not including like YouTube revenue. So I was like, okay, I got paid like, okay, so I made a tweet about this, and actually H Bomber Guy retweeted it, where I was like, I got paid $700 for this article.
Right.
But I was actually mistaken about that. $700 was my contract rate for the LGBT section at Vox that I wrote individual articles for on a per piece basis. But that story that he plagiarized from me, I wrote for the news desk, which I was paid $30 an hour for. So I probably made $120 or $150 for that piece. And he takes it. And like, I don't know how much like 6 minutes of a 20-minute video. I don't know how to do the math on that, but it was more than $150 that he made off of that. You know?
And basically, no work. It's not like he like added work to it. Like after reading Caitlin Burns' article, I actually looked up more about Heron Greensmith's work or like more. I found more things by J.K. Rowling. It sounds like he was just like stitching together and reading other people's work without adding anything, essentially.
Yeah. And that's when I got really pissed off.
It's interesting that he has that like according to Vox in there, because I think that gives him like some defense. For like, oh no, I said according to Vox. But I think for people outside of the journalism industry, that can sort of seem like, oh, well, he said according to Vox. Like, what's the big deal?
Yeah.
But I think for people within the industry, for people who do this for a living, it's not like it's easy to just write down, like, these are the facts about J.K. Rowling. It's like you're doing a ton of research and then you're thinking about how to formulate what you're saying and like what order to put your arguments in.
Yeah.
And you're thinking about this a ton. And that just kind of dashed off according to Vox, and then taking what you did word for word and not even summarizing it or paraphrasing it, but just taking it word for word. It's like there's a huge amount of work in actually formulating these things and putting them into like the specific sentences in the specific order that you want to. I always find there's like a weird break when I try to explain this to non-journalists. Because to them, I feel like they think of it as a sort of like a commodity product. It's like, oh, it's just corn. Like, what's the big deal? It's all kind of the same. But it's like, no, it's actually really difficult there's a lot of choices that go into the way that you're describing these things. And taking somebody else's words is also taking all of the work that they did to boil that down and decide how to present it.
Yeah, I remember like learning about citations at several points in my life. Obviously, going through school, you learn the basics. But I wasn't trained as a journalist. Like, I went to business school, kind of like James Summerton, which is pretty funny, actually.
Wow. It shows, Caitlin.
We know. Yeah, this is why I write about sports. I got a sport management degree. So,
this is a cancel Caitlin episode.
So I had to learn how to do the journalism. And I remember, like, my early citations were kind of garbage. And my editors were like, you really need to be, like, more careful with this stuff. And thankfully, I had a couple of editors who really took me, like, understood why this kept happening and, like, worked with me on how to develop it. And now I'm, like, super careful about it. So, like, if I'm borrowing more than, like, one quote from an article, and usually what I'm doing is I borrow lines from, like, studies or, like, statements that are officially put out. But if it's an article, I'm usually taking, like, quotes that somebody else got from somebody who I want to quote. And you have to be really careful about that also, because it's like, I try to, I don't always, it depends on the circumstances, but I try to quote the writer and the outlet, or I at least credit them. And then specifically, like, this person told X this, you know, type of thing. But there's no, like, wiser editor looking over these YouTubers. It's just like some guy in his living room or her living room or their living room, like, you know, making content.
Right. And making a ton of money potentially too. Once the algorithms find you and start serving you to people, then it's like, you then become this rolling snowball where you're just getting all of this support and all these views. And then before you know it, there's like real money involved. And like, as you said, the raw material is like random freelancers making, I mean, even $700 for an article is a lot if that's what you were making.
It's not the most I ever made for an article, but it was definitely like the highest contract rate I've ever had.
But then
like
I think
for MSNBC now, it's like $500 for an article, right?
Okay.
Yeah,
which is like also like relatively good by the standards of the industry, right? But then it's like the scale is completely different for these like larger scale YouTubers. I think there's also something interesting about this plagiarism stuff, again, which is difficult to communicate to like normal people who don't like remix words for a living, is that like everyone does this thing where like we're taking different sources and we're trying to refer to other people and give credit. And like there is something where like sometimes things fall through the cracks, or like sometimes maybe you should have cited this person, but you forgot. And like it's kind of a qualitative distinction. And like I think there's something I've seen people kind of defending Summerton of like, well, what's the big deal here? Like everyone's reading other sources and presenting things that they read in other sources. And like, that's absolutely true. And like people make mistakes and, you know, things get through. And like, I think people are fairly forgiving about this stuff. Like people cite my work without necessarily like giving me a ton of credit. And generally I'm like, yeah, whatever. I'm just glad the message is getting out. I don't really like push for it. I think what was frustrating about the Summerton situation was how blatant it was.
Yeah.
And like, really, like what we're talking about here is not an honest mistake. We're not talking about like, okay, maybe one article, like maybe he had a block quote and he forgot it was a block quote and he ended up reading it as his words.
Yeah.
It's really like, you don't like accidentally paste 6 minutes of an article into your script and read it and like not know. Like I read block quotes on my show all the time. I'm like, according to this article, and then I'll read a block quote.
And there's then you put no it in your way. Show notes, right?
Yeah, and I put in the show notes, and like I always say, like, this is from wherever, and like there's no way I would like accidentally read somebody else's work as my work and like not know. Like that's That's not something that happens, or like you can imagine something like that potentially getting through, but the how large scale and blatant it was is like really unprecedented.
I've noticed that in just about all of the coverage, or like there's like React Tube, so there's a bunch of people reacting to the H-Bomber guy video, or like people who have gone on to make other videos that like branch out. Like there's now an H-Bomber guy like plagiarism cinematic universe on YouTube.
It's been like 2 weeks. It's incredible.
But I've noticed that like in almost all of the thumbnails for that is that one frame where H-Bomber guy presented a James Summerton script and then highlighted all of the plagiarized parts. And it was
which is incredible. 16
different things. Yeah. And it was like 85% of the script. And I once that graphic went on screen, I'm like, yeah, this guy's cooked. Like, he is not coming back from this.
And it's also in just like big blocks too. It's not like a sentence here and a sentence there. It's like minutes upon minutes. I also think the industry aspect of this is also kind of scary to me, because there's so many people that are sort of remixing and analyzing other people's work, but the raw material of, you know, reporting basic information, it feels like that balance is kind of tipping, that it's like there's so many left-wing media organizations that have cratered and are doing layoffs, and there's all these numbers about how we've lost like a third of local journalism just in the last like 5 years alone, and that doesn't even like cover the previous decades of losing layoffs. It's like we're losing the sort of, there's supposed to be a kind of soil of raw material underneath all of this commentary where it just gives you like basic facts. And it's so easy to produce this kind of commentary stuff, even if you're not necessarily plagiarizing, or even if you're doing it in an ethical way. I really worry, you know, in the information age, the amount of commentary that we have versus like basic information.
Yeah, I think the other thing that came to mind with all of this is how much, and this is like moving away from the YouTube stuff, but like how much of modern news like reporting is just aggregation now?
Yeah.
You know, and I've done the news desk thing where you aggregate stories, and it sucks. Like I couldn't stand it. I was literally just doing that job in hopes to get a promotion to write about the real shit I wanted to write about. Mm-hmm. But like, the ratio of aggregation to actual raw reporting is, like you said, is disappearing.
Yeah, because reporting is expensive.
Yeah, and you add on top of it the AI shit, which is the aggregation and turn it into their own shit. Right. And then, like, there was the thing this week with Elon Musk's AI thing, Grok, I think it's called. Yeah. And it turns out that they just, like, Grok just took all of the ChatGPT stuff. Like OpenAI information and use all of that data. So like now you have AI. It's like a human centipede.
AI plagiarizing the AI. Yeah. Good God. Yeah, of course that's inevitable though. Because once something's on the internet, of course it's going to get scraped and spit back out. But then also what's interesting about the H-Bomber guy video, and I think one of the reasons I was so fascinated by it, is because in James Summerton's videos and also in the other people that he noted, these people that are basically just like taking the raw material of like the Fyre Festival documentary and just like kind of spitting it out, not necessarily plagiarizing, but like slightly paraphrasing and then spitting it back out. These are YouTubers whose videos have been recommended to me and I've watched. And like you, I've gotten 2 or 3 minutes into them and they're boring. And like there's something where like you can tell that it's not like clicking. There's it's like you're saying words. And sort of technically these words are interesting, but I think like the mediocrity of this kind of work is also like has become more obvious to me, that these kind of content farms and the incentive to just post and post and post, even if that means doing basically no work, the problem is all of the impetus for producing journalism and like how to get other people's eyeballs on your work is you basically have to like trick these algorithms into recommending you. And one of the ways you do that is by like producing content like 3 or 4 times a week. That like the one of the real problems here, like the power structure, is that like the YouTube algorithm thinks that you're credible if you're producing more stuff and if you're producing regularly, which is exactly the opposite of how it should work, right? It should be something about like the quality of your work, but there's no kind of algorithmic way to measure that. So it measures it with all of these proxy indicators. And then once people find out what the proxy indicators are, they then, of course, manipulate their own content so that it fits those parameters. And then people are producing videos 3 or 4 times a week. And like, you can't produce good work three or four times a week. Video essays, it takes so, I mean, I also make video essays and it takes ages to make one, and much less a good one.
I can't even do 3 or 4 written.
Yeah, it's wild. I don't know how people do it.
I had a weekly column, and sometimes I just didn't have a fucking idea that week.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, and you, well,
and
a lot of columnists,
editor,
that's...
I'm like, can you help me out here with some ideas?
Yeah, I mean, I read the New York Times op-ed section a lot, and like, a lot of people don't have ideas either. It's pretty fucking obvious. It's like, all right, I wonder if people doing on college campuses. But like, I feel like the sort of, there's the obvious villains of these people that are plagiarizing, but then the real villain is these algorithms and the way that these basically corporations have decided what kind of content they're going to feed to you. And none of us, like, all of us want to believe that we're, you know, I just like look at what I want to look at on the internet. But like, these algorithms are extremely important for like what you're interested in and the kind of thing that you're consuming. And so ultimately we need like these companies to give a shit about this and actually focus on quality. This is another of my favorite YouTubers, Ann Reardon, who talks about like all the fake fucking recipe videos online, these like craft videos that like literally don't work, some of which are dangerous to children, but they're like putting them out on fucking YouTube, these content farms. And it's like somebody like Ann Reardon, who's like basically a random mom in Australia who does like good recipes and like tests them first. The algorithms don't know how to notice her. They do know how to notice these content farms. And like, that's the ultimate like villain.
Yeah. I'm curious what an H-Bomber Guy video, but for Substack, would look like.
Ooh.
Because I think they have similar incentives to like frequently post and.
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. And cover like the latest, like, you know, controversy.
Yeah.
You know, whatever little thing happens on like a college campus or whatever cancel culture bullshit happens. It's like, okay, we need you to weigh in on this, even if you have like nothing interesting to add.
That was one thought that I had, is like, yeah, I wonder if there's an issue like this on the Substack side of things. But then again, I'm too lazy to do that. So
these are your own incentives. The incentives of podcasting, also not ideal. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, as we're talking about this too, I'm thinking about like my own career, because I used to be much more hard news. Like, I was just a straight up reporter. And I don't do like any of that anymore. Like, I did one, I think I have an article coming out for like a trade magazine for like Fortune 500 female like C-suite executives, where I wrote about, like, it was actually a raw reported piece about like how to support trans employees. And I think that was like the one I had for the year. Like, everything else was just commentary. And like, you're right, it is a lower effort thing, but it does seem to be valued more, right? Like, I've had a couple of publications come to me being like, yeah, why don't you do some reporting for us for like $500 a piece? And I'm like, I get that for my columns. Like, you need to pay me like double that, because it's double the effort, right? So I think just the incentive structure as a whole throughout the entire media like ecosphere is just upside down right now.
Right. Even if you think about like the outlets that are still doing, you know, still publishing original reporting, how many outlets, like kind of left-leaning outlets, are actually publishing like, you know, magazine articles, like real investigations? I mean, I remember one of the ways I transitioned from working in international development to working in journalism was I would write these long magazine pieces where I would spend like a year to a year and a half. I would interview like 60 people and like I would publish these like 10,000 word articles. And like, is anyone doing those? Like, the New Yorker still publishes those things. The Atlantic, I guess, but we can talk about the Atlantic for ages. But like, the number of outlets that are publishing kind of real investigations, you know, something you spend a lot of time on and really get below the surface, it's like, we're losing those outlets. And we're also losing people that have the skills to do those things, right? I mean, these things atrophy and they don't come back.
But you have so many layoffs too, right? And, and you're laying off editors, you're laying off writers, you're laying off like connections, like these editors, I don't know who to pitch with stuff anymore. Like, I had a really interesting story about this trans kid. I don't want to go into too much detail, but it was like a trans kid whose parent reacted to their coming out by like founding the local Moms of Liberty chapter. and it was going to be a whole deep dive thing. Like, there was going to be travel involved. I was going to, like, interview everybody under the sun. And, like, I didn't know who to pitch that to. I pitched it to a few people. I didn't get any responses. And then I had to go back to this kid and be like, I'm so sorry. Like, I couldn't.
Oh, God.
I couldn't land the story anywhere. By the way, if you're an editor who's intrigued by that idea, DM me on Twitter. My DMs are open. Right.
But also, like, $500 is not going to even cover your costs for something like that. I mean, there have to be, like, thousands of dollars potentially just to compensate for, like, the actual, like, the work, like, the travel and the expenses involved, much less the actual, like, hourly work. And the number of outlets that are doing that is, like, really small now. It's like a couple. When you think about it, like, the number of pieces like that that are published in national outlets per year, it's like that number is falling. And I don't think there's, like, a, you know, we've had this fake fucking free speech crisis for, like, a fucking decade now, but, like, as far as, it's not really a freedom of speech issue, but it's sort of like a quality of information issue that does not take on the same, you know, emergency parameters that other quote-unquote crises have been cast as. It's like we're just losing the information on which we, like, vote as democratic citizens. Like, we're losing that stuff, especially, like, left-wing media. Like, we just lost fucking Jezebel. Like, it's now they came back.
Paste magazine bought the brand, so
Well, hopefully, like, they hire people and it becomes, like, a thing. But it's like, we've you know, we've lost almost every, you know, alt weekly in the country. Every, you know, most cities used to have, like, a kind of establishment newspaper and then an alt weekly, and, like, the one in Seattle is, like, two people now, basically. And, like, a lot of them, like, even the Village Voice is basically toast. And so we just lost these things, and there's really nothing to replace them. And, like, you just need to have people, like, gathering the raw data on which commentary is based. And it's I mean, it's even on some level, like, more of an indictment of the plagiarizers, because it's like, you can't even do the fucking bare minimum to, like, to paraphrase these fucking things that you're getting. It's not that hard to not cross a line, actually.
I also think about, like, how many people are still getting away with this? Like, I think there's some attention on it now because of this, but, like, we're going to forget about it in 5 months, and what's stopping, you know, another content mill from coming in and doing the same thing again? Are we going to have just an annual H Bomber Guy roast of plagiarizers? Like, I don't imagine he wants to do that.
I think that, like, the egregiousness of Summerton, like, makes it so kind of easy to process. But I think there's probably lots of other people that are pushing just up to the line, right? That are, like, they are doing some paraphrasing. They're maybe mixing two of their sources. They're maybe being slightly more transparent about their sources, but they're also fundamentally, like, not really doing anything. And that, I feel like that's also a problem too. It's just, like, essentially vampirically taking other people's work and, like, maybe you're kind of citing it, but it's like those gray areas are, you know, I don't think you'll get called out on the internet for that, but it's just sort of like laziness.
The other thing too, going back to, like, my personal experience with this, there was literally nothing that I could do when I found out I was plagiarized, because I don't even own the rights to that article.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Right? Like, I wrote it for Vox. Like, they own that. So it's up to Vox to, like, put in a copyright claim on some random YouTube video. Like, they're not going to do that. Like, they don't, they barely have the staff to, like, continue operations, because they're always laying people off. And so, like, people were like, oh, you should sue. I'm like, I don't have a case. Like, Gita Jackson, who is another writer who is plagiarized by James Summerton, actually wrote a really good article about this. I'll link in the show notes. And the title of it is Please Stop Asking Me to Sue James Summerton.
Yeah, that was good. I read that.
She, you know, she talks about how I talked about how I was paid for it. She was exactly right. I was under contract. I actually don't own that work. And there was another time in my life where this, like, rights issue affected me. I wrote an article about this all trans hockey team. It was the first ever all trans, like, sports team in North America that we know of. And I wrote an article for SB Nation, incidentally, is a Vox subsidiary, about that team. And I actually got contacted about, like, movie or television rights. And, like, they were going to offer me a bunch of money. And I was like, I don't own the rights. Like, you have to go to Vox. And as far as I know, it kind of just died. So, like, that's another like layer to this discussion where like you're stealing from corporations who like underpaid their writers for the original documentation.
Right.
And then the corporations are so large that they like don't care about it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's really, I was actually really surprised during the H Bomber Guy video when he talked about how Mental Floss put in a copyright claim. And I'm like, I can't imagine any of the outlets I've ever written for actually putting in a copyright claim like that.
Yeah. Because the work is kind of, it's a couple years old. No, you know, no one, it matters a lot more to you than it matters to them. And then also there's also the structural thing too of like someone like James Summerton doesn't have like a boss that you can go to. I was actually thinking because of the algorithms and kind of the like walled garden nature of the internet, I honestly think if he had just kept posting videos and like closed the comments, didn't mention it, a lot of his viewers would never have even known about this because they weren't algorithmically served the H Bomber Guy video. They were still being served James Summerton videos. And like, I think if we've learned anything from this like sort of cancel culture panic and all these like internet blowups, if you just ignore it and like keep it moving, a lot of people just won't notice. Like a huge contingent of the internet can be very mad at you.
Yeah.
And you can easily maintain an audience. And just like, you know, maybe your subreddit hates you, or maybe there's corners of the internet where people like really hate you. But a lot of people don't engage with the media that they're consuming on that, like on that detailed of a level. And so I really think that if Summerton had just like kept producing videos that, you know, like you said, this will blow over. And in 6 months, his Patreon would probably be expanding again.
Probably.
I mean, Shane Dawson is back, right? James Charles is back. Like, people have these scandals and they just keep going. And it's sort of like, oh, I remember there was some blow up about him a couple years ago on the internet. But like, these things fade. Even if they're huge, they fade from memory fairly quickly.
Yeah.
And so the cynic in me is like, this Summerton guy just should have just kept posting and he probably would have been fine in like a year, as dark as that is to think about.
Who is the conservative journalist who had that big plagiarism scandal? Was it
Benny Johnson?
Benny Johnson, yeah, he still has a career.
Yeah, I mean, we could do a whole separate thing on the incentives of conservative media, which are slightly different. Just like quality does not matter at all. I feel like if you or me were found to be just constantly lying, I feel like we would take a reputational hit, but like that doesn't matter over there.
But there's a lot of people who do think that I am constantly lying, by the way, including about my own gender. So
slightly different level of discourse. Last thing I want to ask, though, I'm actually curious.
Yeah.
If you were like to meet James Summerton, like what would you want to say?
I don't think I'd want to say anything.
Yeah.
I mean, despite my Twitter persona, I'm actually quite conflict avoidant in person. So, I would
probably maybe what do you want to say to him on your podcast then?
I would say, James, please don't pivot to being like an alt-right reactionary off of this.
Yeah.
You're still like a person who probably has value to the world. You hurt me and a lot of other people. Take this as a learning opportunity.
Yeah.
I don't know that you have a public career left. I think that what you got is probably what you deserved. And for those who don't know, he's basically deleted everything, including his YouTube channel and his Patreon and all of that. So, you know, in the next thing that you do in life, like, just learn some lessons from it and try to be a better person is what I would
I honestly, I mean, maybe this is like, I don't know, too bleeding heart or whatever, but I have actually been like worried about his mental health and like what he's going to do about this, because you only do that kind of thing if you're like deeply insecure and like sort of, and there's obviously a laziness thing. I'm not going to defend it obviously, but like you don't do that from like a place of like robust mental health. And so for this to then all of this be happening, like I genuinely hope that like, he's healthy and well and coping. I don't want anything like bad to come out of this. And I, you know, I'm sure he'll have a next chapter in his life.
Yeah. I would also say like, dude, what's up with your misogyny? Like maybe take some introspection about that.
Yeah. Maybe think a little bit about it. Don't make up angry white women in the comments of your videos.
And evidence of which no one can find. Angry white women, you know?
Yeah.
So, Michael, I believe this is a first for you, doing out-of-context cancellations.
Out-of-context cancellations? I'm honored to be here for this.
Yeah. Feels a little weird again with no Oliver here today.
Yeah.
But we're going to have some fun with this. So the first thing we're canceling is we are going to cancel Cybertrucks.
I have not seen one in real life yet. Have you seen one?
I have not.
Okay.
Did you see the crash test footage that was released a couple weeks ago?
Ooh, no.
Yeah, it was like there's a side-by-side of a Cybertruck and like a Ford F-150 and how they crash. And there's like no give to the Cybertruck. Like so many people are just going to die from this.
Yeah, I feel like the first one I'm going to see in real life is going to be like bearing down on me. That's going to be the last thing I see.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be a pedestrian that gets hit by one of those. I'll say that. Next thing, speaking of YouTube, which we spent a lot of time on, we're going to cancel this comes from my listener, we're going to cancel the Daily Effing Wire advertising on every other YouTube video.
Ooh, I have a very sophisticated system of ad blockers, so I have no idea what's being advertised on YouTube, but have you seen these?
I have not. I have YouTube Premium, so I don't get any ads on YouTube.
Okay.
It's super nice, like,
yeah, my gosh,
worth every penny, I gotta be honest. but yeah, that would be annoying. And I just wrote about the Daily Wire's movie Lady Ballers.
Oh, is this the fake one of like we couldn't find like men pretending to be women in sports, so like we made up a problem to make a movie about?
And it's just the most unathletic white man you've ever seen trying to play basketball.
Speaking of like raw material for content, there's going to be a lot of good reaction videos to that. But
yeah.
I will maybe consume it in that form. I'm not fucking watching it though.
I think I'd watch like an Hasanabe reaction to Lady Ballers because I think that'd be pretty funny. we're also going to cancel HR retaliating against a union authorized strike action.
Is this a specific one? I feel like these have been happening all year.
Yeah, I mean, I've been victim to this myself in a past life.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But yeah, no, again, these are out of context, so we don't have context for these. We're canceling lactose intolerance so severe you get an upset stomach from seeing a pizza TikTok.
Okay, can I do my lactose intolerance hot take?
Yes.
Not everyone has one of these, but I have one. Lactose-free yogurt is better than like normal yogurt. Because they add lactase to it, which is like a sort of, I guess, like a kind of a sugar. And so it tastes like sweeter. And so like I am like lactose free hive. I'm into it. Wow. All milk products, they're all better without lactose.
New life hacks.
So the lactose the lactose intolerance people are really onto something.
This next one might be a little off your radar, but it's really bothersome to me personally. I did not come up with this, but we are canceling the new Discord mobile UX.
Are you saying that to me because I'm 41 and you know I'm not on Discord?
No, that's where the youths are. I remember when we did the Cancel Me Daddy live show and we were using Discord as like our like video gathering spot, and you're like, yeah, I installed Discord just for this.
Yeah, so. I had to like make an account and everything. I was like, what is this? This is like years after everybody else was using it.
Yeah. But yeah, I can't stand this this interface. It's horrible.
I will trust you on that. I have not. I continue not to use it. I do use it on my computer sometimes, but I've never tried it on my telephone.
It's like Slack. I only had Slack on my phone to talk to Oliver. And
oh, yeah.
I'm like, oh, I can get rid of that now.
There is something about like a friendship where it's like it's important enough to you to like download a new software. Yes. I have like one friend who's on Snapchat. I'm like, you know what? You're worth it to me. I will download fucking Snapchat.
I have one group chat on WhatsApp, and that's the only reason I have
I also have one group chat on WhatsApp. Yeah, for the overseas folks.
And this last one also applies to me. But again, I did not submit it. We are canceling your brain overthinking and inducing insomnia.
Man, all of society needs to cancel this. This is a huge challenge for me, and it sounds like for a lot of other people too.
What are the intrusive thoughts that get to you?
I have like intrusive, like it's mostly like work thoughts, but then my solution to this, the thing I've noticed to get out of my own little like ruminating spirals is I will tell myself stories. So I'm like, I notice my brain like fixating on something that I like have no control over. And then I'm like, okay, Mike, why did communism fall? And then I'll think, I'm like, okay, one of the factors was, and I'll try to like walk myself through that. Or like lately I've been watching a lot of like space videos and mm-hmm. I'll be like, okay, how did the solar system form? I'll be like, okay, like 5 billion years ago, there was like a cloud of gas. And then I'll like walk myself through. And because it's unrelated to my own life, like pretty soon, it's kind of like counting sheep. It's like pretty soon I sort of forget to freak out about whatever I was freaking out about. And like for me, that helps me get to sleep. It doesn't help me stay asleep, which is my yeah. current problem, but it does help me get out of my own little cycles. What do you do?
I usually turn like a history YouTube video on and just like turn the volume down low and listen to whatever British narrator. But my intrusive thought is always the same thing.
What is it?
I think about like what happens to your consciousness after you die.
Oh my gosh, what have you decided? What's your answer?
I've decided that it just ceases to exist and it's fucking terrifying.
Just like lights out, that's it?
Yep.
Yeah, that's sort of, I feel like that's kind of where I landed too.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that I'm important enough to have like an afterlife or anything. It's like, nope, I'm gone.
But then I got like this panic attack thing happening where I'm like, fuck you for thinking about this again.
Yeah. That's the hardest thing. It's like, why am I ruminating on this? And then you're mad at yourself for ruminating, but then you're ruminating about like what a piece of shit you are for ruminating, which is just a way of ruminating again. I'm telling you space. I'm telling you solar system, Caitlin.
God, I don't know.
Next time.
If you want to submit your own out of context cancellations, you can do so by joining our Discord through becoming a Patreon supporter. You can get a couple of different perks, including early access to our new episodes, and your support will help us pay our new editor, who has also replaced Oliver. Oliver kind of did all of the dirty work on the show, so we're a little
Oliver's
scrambly.
Really good editor. Yeah.
Yeah. But you can join the Patreon and learn about those perks at patreon.com/cancelmedaddy.
But don't do Discord on your phone.
Yes, please don't.
Patreon your phone, yes. Discord, no.
Today's show was made by me, Caitlin Burns, and my amazing new editor, Maria. Dee Peterschmidt made our theme song, and Eden MW designed our graphics. Our show is made possible by the incredible cancelers supporting our work, especially the members of our Canceler Hall of Fame, with the great power to cancel all of their enemies. Meg, we appreciate your support. Happy canceling!